Blog Talk Radio.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat. The human drama of athletic competition.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, how you doing?
I am pumped up after that introduction, spanning the globe, wide world of sports with Coach K and Joe. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited for our
our third show
since we got started here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, people, there was the line was we'd ended about 1.5 shows, but we've made it to the third one, so we're doing pretty good.
Well, I think that the key to that is our guests. If it was just standing on Coach K and Joe, 1.5 shows might have been a far-reaching bet, but I think our guests have helped us out on that. And you know, Joe, we've had about 1,000 listeners a week, so you know, we're pretty excited about that number, and we hope to grow that. And as our show continues to grow, we might mention to potential advertisers out there, help us. We can help their business grow along with us. And the great thing about advertising on the Coach K and Joe Show is that because we have podcasts as well as the live show, their advertising dollars are working for them 24 hours a day with no geographical limits because of the internet. So I would encourage them, if they have an interest, we'd love to have them help their business grow, to contact Milligan Communications at 812-630-2449. And we'll see what we can do as partners. Well, we got a lot going on in the sports world, Joe, not only on the high school level, which we'll get to coming up, pro and college level, you know, football's in force and basketball's just around the corner. You know, NASCAR is big in the South and even in the Midwest, and the chase is going on right now, and I believe there's 4 races to go, and Keselowski is first in the chase, and a familiar name, Jimmy Johnson, is second in the point standings, and Earnhardt, of course, Jr., as we know him, in the 88 car, he's been out the last 2 chase races with a concussion, but he will be back for this race. So if you're a NASCAR fan, and I know there are millions and millions of them out there, it's getting pretty interesting as we go down and finish up NASCAR. Joe, do you watch NASCAR?
I used to. I don't have enough time to do that anymore, but I've watched it from time to time. It's good because you can watch a race, take a little nap, and come back and, you know, keep filtering in. You don't have to watch the whole race. But, you know, our open this week said, you know, we span the globe. I don't know if we span the globe, but I know we span the internet. And I had a question for you real quick, Kenny, before we get into this week's show. Looking over the internet, I read, you know, where and this is not just an IU thing. This is a college thing in general, where IU looked like IU was getting ready to sign yet another, young gentleman, which would put them 2 over the scholarship. Now, this is, I know the IU people call it painting because they say a painter does it, and I know the Purdue people call it creening. You know, what's your opinion on these guys over signing? I know that they're thinking that Cody will go pro, but yet that means one more. And it's not just an IU thing. It's not just a Purdue thing. This is happening all over. What's your opinion?
Yeah, you know, I've really been tuning into that a little bit more. And I guess the bigger question for me would be, what are the coaches, and Coach Green is above board on everything, and so is Matt Painter. You know, what are the coaches telling the recruits? You know, I've seen where, you know, some of these guys are making verbal commitments in 8th grade and freshman and sophomore. And then you see as the programs get better, as IU has grown and become more competitive, and I'm sure Kurt weigh in this at the end of the show, you know, there's more interest in coming to Indiana as there is in Purdue and the different programs. You know, what happens 2 years later if you made that verbal commitment and you thought you were going to be one of those top six, eight, or nine kids? All of a sudden, you're dropping even below that. I really have some questions about that, but again, I'm going to look at that a little bit closer. I'm actually not for it. I don't think you stockpile in college. I don't think that's what college is all about. But you make a commitment to your players, and obviously they're telling them something during the recruiting process that makes mom and dad, who, you know, Joe, you're a parent. You have the best interests of your kids at heart. You better as a parent, and I hope they know what they're walking into with this new approach to recruiting, where you call it painting, I call it stockpiling. And if you don't get somebody better,
I don't call. I'm a Purdue person. I call it creening. But
yeah, that's an interesting question. But we'll see how that pans out. But when you talk about the internet, and you're also seeing where a lot of recruits are tweeting each other, Facebooking each other, especially tweeting each other, and they're pulling their verbals and deciding to go together to different schools who have different needs or places they think they can come in quickly and start or contribute right away and make the teams better. I know that Bill Somm, our scout out of Indianapolis for high school football, talked a little bit about some of the high school recruits up there that have pulled their verbal commitments and now are looking at going to IU on the defensive side. So social networking is making a big difference in the recruiting process, not on the coaches' level, but actually coming down on the recruit and players' level. So be interesting to see if the NCAA thinks they can come in and handle that. Also, Jasper had a doubles team, I think, finished runner-up at the state tournament. Will Sager and Noah Moss finished runner-up in the doubles up at the state tournament.
Yeah, and this weekend as well, Hannah Welsh Hannah Welsh will be representing Jasper at the IHSA Cross Country State Championships. So
yeah, that state meet is going on up in Terre Haute. The girls start at 1 o'clock Eastern time, and then the boys follow after that. I've got some personal interest in that, as my daughter runs for Memorial High School in Evansville, and they will be competing in the state tournament as a team, as will North High School on the boys' side, I believe. Alex Severin from Memorial on the boys' side will be an individual representative. Bar Eve's got a team up in the state finals. I think Perry Central's done well. So there's a lot of Southern Indiana teams and individuals that flavor that state tournament in cross country. The nice thing about it is you go up there and you start, and it's tough running around the course to try to see my daughter run, but it is about a 25-minute race overall. At the state tournament, it may be less because you've got better runners up there, but it is amazing to see both the female and male runners take on cross country and run those courses, and the strength which they drive into the finish line is pretty impressive. So the state finals for the IHSA cross country is going on. Soccer state finals are going on from Southern Indiana. Memorial has a team on the girls' side. That'll be taking place up in Indianapolis, I believe. So a lot of stuff, a lot of great sports going on this weekend, and we'll talk about a lot more coming up.
Okay, well, on a personal note, I'd like to wish Paige good luck in the state finals of cross country. And after the break, we will be talking Jasper football with the Jasper football guru, Walt Ferber.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff. We've got high school football to talk about out of Indianapolis. We've got Chris Goodman. If you may remember him from the Goody Awards when he was doing sports on TV, he'll be out of Evansville to talk about those playoff games. So we got a lot coming up, Joe.
Okay, and we'll get back to that right after this.
You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. Buy a fence in October and enjoy 90 days same as cash. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
We're on double secret probation, whatever that is. We can't afford to have a toga party.
You guys up for a toga party?
Toga! Toga!
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is! Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now!
And now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by WITZ play-by-play man, Hall of Fame radio announcer, Walt Ferber. Walt, how you doing?
Oh, doing well today. It's Friday, so it's got to be raining. I think it's rained about the last four, but looking forward to a great day today.
Yeah, the Jasper Wildcats, they should be used to playing in this stuff. It's just been an every-week thing here towards the end of the season. But, Walt, Seymour got a little long trip. You do. The team does. I know the team's leaving it, too. And give us a little lowdown about the game.
Well, it's not obviously it's not a team that we play every day, which is kind of nice. They play out of the Hoosier Hills Conference, and they play a mostly 5A schedule. Joe, they have won four of their last five ball games, and they like to pass the ball. As quarterback Austin Sutton will be looking at Gabe Jordan a lot tonight, his favorite receiver. They will run just enough to keep you honest, and I know you did some coaching over at Southridge, Joe. They run out of the wing T there, but a little different delineation than they did at Southridge, and they'll pass the ball and they'll try to stretch the field and go deep as much as possible. Cats overall probably a little bit bigger than Seymour, but this is kind of new territory for them. They hadn't won a tournament game for a while, since 1996, so should be a big crowd tonight at Bullet Field, and it should be, I think, an enjoyable ball game.
You know, Walt, every time you go into a game situation, and I know you're with the Cats on a weekly basis, as a coach, you want to be healthy. You want to be mentally ready, but you want to be physically ready because you want to be able to bring your best. How are the Cats looking this week physically going into the Seymour contest?
Honestly, Coach, they're probably as healthy as they've been all year. They rested Devin Traylor last week. He had a little tweak on the shoulder. Probably could have played if he had to, but now he's 100% tonight. There's been some injuries on the line, but all of the starters are back. And it looks like obviously you don't play this many games without getting, bungs and bruises. And I think everybody plays maybe a little bit injured, a little bit hurt, but I don't think there's anybody really injured out there. And for the second game of the tournament and the 11th game of the season, I think we're probably in about as good a shape as we possibly could be.
Well, as you go and you look at Seymour, and you mentioned it earlier in the segment, you said, you know, we don't see them a lot, if hardly ever. When you compare the Big 8 Conference with the folks and the foes that Seymour plays, as you ran down their schedule, was there any particular teams that stood out, or how do you gauge their schedule compared to Jasper's?
Well, you know, it's going to honestly be a little tougher. They play, and I don't have the schedule in front of me, but it's what I remember, four of their first five games were against 5A schools. So they play a lot of 5A and teams that will be 6A next year. Columbus East in the HHC is ranked number one at the end of the season. They're the only other undefeated team in 4A besides Jasper. They're always pretty good. Jeffersonville Red Devils are having a great season this year. I think they're 8-2 going into the semis tonight. They play a pretty good schedule, but, and I know a little bit about this because my youngest son John was assistant coach at New Albany for several years. It's a different brand of football. It's not as physical, I think, as Big 8 football is. Football is in our area. They got a lot of skill position, probably more speed on a general basis than we have. But I think as far as physicality, Jasper's probably going to be as or more physical than about anybody Seymour plays.
Well, they put up a lot of points last week, but they also gave up a lot of points. So it looks like to me that defensively, and I know Nick Eckert's group has been strong all year long, and they didn't miss a beat last week against Boonville, as I was able to catch parts of the game. But when you look at the points they scored last week, I'm sure it had Nick looking at that film over and over again.
Oh, yeah. Nick's pretty sharp in defense, and he's pulled a couple of things out. You may see a tweak here and there. But, you know, Nick runs a complicated defense. They're going to probably see some stunts that they haven't seen this year. And everything is predicated on pressure. So those front guys are going to have to get pressure. But that defense is solid all around. You've got, you know, a solid front four. The linebacker core last week played without Devin Traylor. Spencer Otto moved from his defensive end spot and looked good. So you've got some versatility there. You've got several guys. You look at Huffman and Gobert and Otto that can play either on the defensive line or at the linebacker spot. They've got the strength to play on the line and the speed to cover in passing situations. And it's as good a defensive backs as I've seen on a Jasper team in many, many years. The three Betzes and Jesse Schmidt have done an exemplary job of the defensive backfield. And I think Jasper's going to look to put a little pressure on the quarterback, Austin Sutton. And as long as we get a little pressure, I like our defensive backs in that situation. And I don't make a lot of bold predictions, but I will predict right now that Seymour will not have 65 points at the end of tonight.
Well, I tell you,
okay,
that's
well,
a lot
you
of
know,
points.
You know, you hear a lot about Schmidt.
Go ahead, Joe.
Walt, you know, you hear a lot about the Schmidts, the Huffmans, the Traylors, et cetera. But, you know, mm-hmm. One thing I've noticed over the last couple of weeks, and I want to get your opinion on this, it's also the seniors like Cade Elliott and Dylan Wagner that don't get as much of the publicity that really are a big part of this team as well.
Yeah, you know, Cade Elliott and Wagner both are fine examples about that. They have busted their tail. They've done a great job. And you talk about two guys that do make offensive plays for the Cats, but probably spend 90% of their time blocking. And you look at the Jasper offense, and I think the turnaround the last several weeks is the fact that the blocking has gotten a lot better. And you talk to Coach Ahrens about that, and I think he says that on the offensive side of the football, we started getting a lot more productive when those guys have started winning the battles in the trenches. It's a complicated game, but you're going to talk to any football coach out there, and the team that wins in the trenches are going to win the football games. And on the offensive side of the football, you know, you got our full starters back in there, putting back in after being out a few weeks. You move people around. Mitch May's been moved to a guard from a tackle. People are in the right places. And, you talk about Wagner, you talk about Elliott. These are guys at tight end and fullback that have added to that blocking, and that's how Cermi and our runners have been able to be as productive as they have. And from a pass blocking standpoint, how Nolan Ahrens has been able to eat his lunch back there and hasn't thrown an interception in, you know, a number of games now. So I think that is very good. Those guys you don't hear a lot about are really a lot of why the team has had the success they have.
You know, Walt, I know no coach wants to look ahead. I understand that, and I know me even bringing this up.
Social work, it's Deborah.
Okay.
me even bringing this up would be blasphemous. But next week, we're looking at either Central or Wrights. Both teams explosive. Both teams have mm-hmm. given up points. I would say Central's probably a little more athletic. Wrights is peaking at the right time. It should be interesting to see who comes out of that Central Wrights game.
Well, I can tell you that that there will be people from Jasper there definitely scouting that that ball game this evening. And, you know, you bring up Central and Wrights, and it kind of makes Jasper folks cringe a little bit. They've got a little better, the Cats, the last several years. But, you know, it's something I'm sure that if Jasper is fortunate enough to get by Seymour tonight, if there was any worrying about having crowds at Jerry Brewer Alumni Stadium, they'll be there, and that should be a heck of a game. And you know, you talk and to the folks, to the team members, and I think Jasper would be ready for whoever comes out of that ball game, and it should be a good one tonight.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that if the Cats can get up there and do what they need to do, and I know that Coach Aarons is going to have them ready to do that, and you and Coach Gobert will do a great job on the play-by-play. I really believe Jasper has a great opportunity moving into next week to take on either Central or Wrights and come out of there with a victory. I'm not sure that either one of those teams is as strong as they have been in the past, and Jasper has shown week in and week out that they are up to the task. Well, as we end this segment, I just want to say that we certainly appreciate having you on. We hope you'll be back with us next week, and I wish you safe travels. Now, you told me you were heading over to Huntingburg after this. Go ahead and tell us about
it. Yes, it's a Quest for a Million Pennies. It's one of our station's big charities every year. It's for the transportation fund for Shriners Children's Hospital, and we have been fortunate enough through the schools and through different places to raise over $150,000 for sick kids to have the opportunity to be treated, and we've purchased, I believe, 5 vans for the Shriners to do that, and it just allows the kids to make sure that they get to and from, and a little comfort for them, as the Shriners Hospitals do such a great job in taking care of kids all over the country, including people here in Southern Indiana, and do it at absolutely no charge. So it's a charity that we're very happy to be associated with. And I was at Huntingburg Elementary yesterday. We'll be there for Grandparents Day again today, and then heading off for Seymour. Looking forward to the trip tonight.
Well, that's a great. The Shriners are a great group, and they've done a lot. Even have done some stuff for members of my family in the past, and I appreciate not just what you do on the air, but what you do off the air in the community, and that makes all the difference. So, once again, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. And Joe, I'm throwing it back to you.
Okay, Kenny, and after the break, we'll be talking to Jasper volleyball coach Deborah Geisler, about the upcoming Jasper to My State.
You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Here at Dino's Upholstery, no job is too big or too small. Our best compliments are the referrals from customers to their family and friends. Customer satisfaction is our number one priority, and we strive to give our customers professional service at rock-bottom prices. New at Dino's Upholstery, Jack's Wax Products. We are the only Jack's Wax distributor in Southern Indiana. We have everything that you need to be the professional detailer you have always wanted to be. Jack's Wax Products have a 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. Call Dino's Upholstery today, 683-2362, or visit us at 201 North Cherry Street in Huntingburg.
Looking for a dentist close to home? And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We're joined by Jasper volleyball coach, Deborah Geisler. Deborah, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Great. I think from what I gather, I didn't get to make it down, but I think you had a pretty exciting regional final down at Mount Vernon on Tuesday night.
Yes, we did. I told the girls, I think we've had, you know, enough of those where we get behind and have to fight back. So hopefully we see something different this weekend.
Okay. And, you know, tell the people that didn't get to see you, you were down 2-0 in games, right? And
yes.
What exactly do you tell a team when you're down 2-0 and get them to come back and win the next three games?
Well, I mean, it was just something where I couldn't even recognize the team I was watching. We struggled. We knew Mount Vernon had great servers, very aggressive servers, and our passing, you know, we struggled with our passing, and then we couldn't really take advantage of the height difference. You know, our front line was quite a bit bigger than theirs, but when you can't pass the ball up to run an offense, you don't really get to see that difference. So, you know, in between the second and third, you know, we just talked to the girls about, you know, how hard they had worked all season, you know, and different things like that, that they work so hard throughout the season. And we play, you know, in tournaments on the weekends where we're playing bigger schools and tough competition. We didn't put ourselves through all of that hard work in order to just come in and get beat 3-0. You know, we also talked to them about, you know, it's a game. Right now we're on track to lose 3-0. You know, that's the worst case scenario. So if they can just, you know, bust their butts and do everything they can individually, you know, do their jobs, you know, the worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to lose, but they might be surprised about what the outcome might be. And I think, you know, they started to look at each other and started to get excited in the huddle and just say, you know what, we can do this. We've been in positions before where we've been down, you know, just like the sectional finals against Heritage Hills. We had been down in that match as well. And I think they just started to get a little more confidence from each other about, you know, it's just one point at a time. You know, we just have to do the very basics. And, you know, they started to have success in that third set, and that kind of carried over to the fourth and fifth.
Okay. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of that had to also do, you know, you've got a really good senior group this year on the team. Tell us a little bit about them.
You know, the seniors, the nice thing about them is that they did get to experience some success last year as juniors, so they know how much work it takes, and all season long they've been a group of really hard workers, whether it's in practice or in matches. You know, there's only 6 kids out on the floor at a time, but I can't speak enough about the kids that are not always out there, you know, pushing each other in practice, and, you know, they're very competitive. Our practices can get very loud because they're, you know, trash talking each other and just trying to motivate each other a little bit, you know, all in fun and just bringing out the best in each other. But I think they've been, you know, calm leaders and very welcoming to other players that have been brought up to play with them. And I think, you know, everyone's just comfortable with that group. They don't care who's getting the attention. They all know what the goal is. And I don't know if that's from having success last year or just from, you know, working so hard and seeing how great the season has gone. They know what it takes to be successful, and they know the work it takes, and it's, you know, not one thing that's going to win a match. It's got to be, you know, 25 points each time, and, you know, these girls really bring out the best in each other, and that's really nice to see.
Okay, you got Edgewood on Saturday, the first game. Actually, it'll be your first game. It'll be the second game of the day. The first game, it will start at 11 between Bishop Chittard and Brownstown. But before that game, you'd have Edgewood. What do you know about Edgewood?
Well, I know that's who we played last year in the semifinal round of semi-state. And, you know, I'm still waiting on some tape on them, but we've got their stats, and it looks like they're probably similar to a team like Mount Vernon. I think they've got two hitters that are, you know, getting a majority of all of their attacks. You know, I've heard from other coaches that have played them that they serve tough. They you know, are small and scrappy. You know, some of the coaches have said we'll be bigger in the front line, but we've got to, you know, put up a block and make sure we're playing good defense so that we can run an offense and take advantage of the size, if that is indeed the advantage that we have. But I know that they've made it to semi-state, so I know they've beaten a lot of teams on the way. And, you know, like I've said to the girls all season long, is that when we run our offense, You know, there's not a lot of teams that can beat us, and so we just have to go into the weekend, you know, focusing on what got us to this point, and you know, and have fun. It's one point at a time, and the girls are, you know, really having a nice, you know, fun time this postseason, even though we've had some really tight matches. You know, they're all just, you know, peaking at the right time, I feel like, and pulling through some tough situations, you know, Saturday and Tuesday. So, you know, I'm real excited to see how they do on Saturday, being back at Cabby O'Neill and, you know, our home court. So we're excited to see what they can do.
You know, I went to your sectional final, and I went to a couple games during the season. And one thing I did notice, and I know that I'm much more of a volleyball expert than Coach K is. is the good, nice thing about your team is you're always the blockers can't set up on any one hitter.
Right.
Any of the girls you have in the front row are able to put the ball down. So, and also your passing. I mean, with my wife always says I don't throw compliments around very much in volleyball wise, but I really like Jacqueline Schmidt back at your libero position. She does a nice job starting your offense, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. I mean, she's just one of those kids that, you know, we turned her into a libero last year, and, you know, her first year in the position, she ended up being a junior all-star, which was just a testament to how hard she had worked, you know, to get to that position. She sees the ball well. She, you know, is very good with whoever's back there next to her. You know, it comes to a point where, you know, on Tuesday night I said, you know, you get to any ball that you can pass, because we have that much confidence in her. And I think once she gets going, you know, she has that same confidence in herself, and the other girls on the floor know that when, you know, we're directing a ball to her, we set up our block in order to funnel balls back to the back row wherever she's at. And that's, you know, that's kind of how we direct other teams. That's what we want other teams to do. So, you know, if we can do that with our blocking and, you know, get her to pass a majority of the balls, I think, you know, that's our game plan, is to have her, you know, starting the offense. And then, you know, you're right, our setters can set any one of the girls in the front row. We typically try to establish our middles because we've had such success with them, and that makes the job so much easier on the left and right sides. And they come up with some big shots. You know, I talk about Abby Rogers all the time, you know, and Megan Stefanoglu on the right side. They just come up with these shots on the right side that just, you know, kind of out of nowhere. You know, you predominantly set middles and lefts, and then they get, you know, a few far in between, and they end up putting those balls away. And it's just really nice to see, and it's a great jump start for the team whenever you can get shots like that to fall. You know, our right sides do an excellent job of setting up the block. Annie Huebner, Katie Krimp, and Elizabeth Albrand are doing a nice job on the outside. You know, whenever they're getting set out there, they get a lot of sets out there just when our passing isn't ideal. And they're doing a good job. They're all very consistent when I look at our hitting numbers. You know, Tori and Shelby in the middle do a really nice job of being aggressive and, you know, and making that middle blocker on the other side stay with them. The middle blocker on the other side has to know where our middles are. And, you know, that's really helped out from our other hitter standpoint. So, you know, it seems like we're pretty well-rounded. Our setters know, you know, they can mix the ball up if we need to. And, you know, that's kind of how we've gotten where we are.
Okay, Deborah. Well, thanks for joining us on the Coach K and Joe Show, and good luck this weekend.
All right. Thanks. Great. Great talking to you.
And I'd like to personally invite everybody out to the Cabby O'Neill. The first game is at 11 a.m. versus Chittard in Brownstown Central, and then let's pack the Cabby O'Neill for that Jasper versus Edgewood game, and then also for the 7 o'clock game, championship game that night. We'll be back with Coach K and Brent Weibel right after this.
So what's in the November issue of Jasper Today? The Jasper Life with Mayor Terry Seitz, Sha Na Na, JHS Pops Concert, Football Diaries, U Indies, Adam Kinese, Eye on the Arch, Jordan Jones, Homegrown Business, Grounded, Organic, and Natural Foods, Jasper Icon, Cyril Burge, the Jasper Marching Band Report, and much more. Go to www.jaspertodayonline starting November 1st and click on the magazine cover of the Jasper Train Depot. You can also go to www.jaspertodayonline and read past issues. Jasper Today, taking Jasper into the 21st century as your multimedia magazine about Jasperites.
Mr. Bobby, come on down here.
Help me, Jesus! Help me, Jewish God! Help me, Allah! Ah! Help me, Tom Cruise!
And now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back. I really do love some of the segment breaks and the re-entry in anywhere from John Belushi to Will Ferrell to you never know who's coming up. Bob Knight, we never know what that snippet's going to be. So we are back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and I want to remind listeners, whether you're live or on the podcast, you can follow us and send questions in if you don't want to call in live. If you want to send a question either on the show that you're listening to or to be talked about, asked for next week, you can follow us on Twitter at Coach K and Joe, or you can follow us on Facebook at the Coach K and Joe Show. So we have access to Twitter and Facebook, and you have access to us from that area. So coming up, we have Brent Weibel, and I think he's standing by. And Brent normally comes in on our first segment with Walt Ferber, talk a little bit about Jasper football. But we're going to start splitting them up, and because there's going to be various times when they have some other things that we want to talk about. And this is one of those times. So, Brent Weibel, good to have you back on the show and ready to talk about something that's pretty important to you and probably to some of the listeners out there.
Well, thanks, Kenny. I appreciate it. I think you guys do a great job with the show. What I wanted to talk about this morning a little bit is an old basketball coach that was in the Shelburne area and North Central, Farmersburg High School. Of course, that's where I went to high school. A lot of people don't know that, but that's kind of the area that I was raised in. And it's interesting how it kind of parallels with the Jasper story here a little bit. But let me tell you about this basketball coach that they had. His name was Paul Weekly. And Mr. Weekly came from the one and only Oblong, Illinois. And he was a graduate of Eastern Illinois University, where he lettered in baseball, basketball, and football, which is pretty amazing. I think he graduated like in 1935 or something like that. And in 1936, he started his coaching career as the head basketball coach in Taylorville, Illinois, and then found his way to Shelburne, Indiana. And it's really kind of a story that almost sounds like it's made up. It sounds like something that ought to belong in Hoosiers, probably. But prior to 1937, Kenny, Shelburne High School had never had a winning basketball season in the history of the school. And after the arrival of Mr. Weekly in 1937, and until its consolidation with North Central in 1956, they never had a losing season. And they captured their first sectional in 1942. And in 1947, they won the sectional at Sullivan, and they won the regional at Vincennes, defeating, sorry about this, but your Washington Catholic Cardinals in the first game by a score of 42-36, I think. And then pulled off, which in those days was just, I mean, you can't even hardly fathom what an upset and what a milestone it was for a school of 140 kids. They beat Vincennes, the championship game of the Vincennes Regional, on their home floor, 40-34, to advance to the Sweet 16 at Bloomington. It was played in Bloomington in those days. And what kind of got me involved with this a little bit, we're trying to get a group of us from the area up there are trying to get Mr. Weekly inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. We feel like he definitely has the pedigree, 6 sectional championships, a regional championship, and 8 Wabash Valley prelim championships, which back in those days were about like winning a sectional, if anybody knows anything about the Wabash Valley tournament. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it was fantastic. But I got to know Mr. Weekly really at the end of his career. He was I was at North Central the last 2 years that he coached, and oddly enough, those were two of the the very few, I think he only had three losing seasons in his career. Unfortunately, two of those came at that time, but he was getting on in years. And as you know, coaching is kind of a young man's game. But anyway, what got me interested in this was in 1988, I got hold of a Indiana high school record book in the state of Indiana here, and I started looking at winning coaches and their records and things like that. And I noticed that Miss Weekly's name wasn't in there. And I had remembered when I was a 7th or 8th grader back many years ago that the Terre Haute paper had done a big article on him for winning X amount of games. And I couldn't remember the number, but I knew it was one of those milestones that a lot of coaches, you know, don't hit. And after a little research, I came up that Mr. Weekly's record in 28 years of coaching, Kenny, was 431 wins and 231 losses, but he's not on the list. And so I kind of got to doing some checking, and what happened was he retired in 1977, I believe, as an athletic director at North Central. And what had happened was he had retired to Arkansas and was working in his yard and got into a bee's nest and got stung by bees, and ultimately it led to his death, an untimely death, really. He was, I think, in his mid-60s, but not an old man, certainly. And what happened was, in 1977, the athletic director and a group of people from North Central went to the Hall of Fame, and they nominated him for induction. But what had happened since he died, in 77, late 77, the file kind of became inactive. And I think they just kind of thought that it would come up every year, it would be acted on. Well, that doesn't happen. When you pass from the active list to the deceased, then that has to be revisited. And so a group of guys contacted me and said, Brent, you've got some contacts. Would you work on seeing if we could get Mr. Weekly inducted? So I contacted the Hall of Fame and found out that about 3 weeks from the date that I contacted them, they were going to have their nominating speeches. So we went up and we gave a speech and on behalf of Mr. Weekly. Now, if anybody's ever done that, you only get 2 minutes, and it's kind of hard to tell a story in 2 minutes. Obviously, I've spent more than that just kind of giving you a background on the man right here. But getting back to Mr. Weekly and what he accomplished, that 1947 team advanced to the semi-state, and it was one of those stories you can relate to this. It's the last guy out of Shelburne turned the lights off. There wasn't anybody left there in 1947. They all go over to Bloomington, where they're taking on Terre Haute Garfield, led by the great Clyde Lavellant, which is a tall order in itself. Well, they arrive at the gymnasium, and the student manager kind of grabs Mr. Weekly as they walk into the field house on the campus of Indiana University, and grabs Mr. Weekly, pulls him over to the side and says, Coach, I've got some bad news. And the coach goes, what? Well, we forgot our basketball shoes. They're back in Shelburne, Indiana. And he goes, you're kidding me. We don't have any basketball shoes at all. And he goes, no. Well, it just so happened that Branch McCracken, who was the head coach at IU, was a very, very good friend of Mr. Weekly's and thought a lot of him and his integrity and his record and had known him for a number of years. Well, he overheard the conversation, and he walks up to Mr. Weekly and he says, Paul, he says, don't worry about the basketball shoes. The sporting goods store should still be open downtown, and if you'll get me the sizes of your players, I'll run downtown to the sporting goods store and I'll purchase shoes, and you guys will be good to take the floor against Garfield, you know, in your basketball game here in the semi-state. So he did. And not only did he go down and get them, in those days, Kenny, I know that probably a lot of listeners can't even remember this, but in those days, everybody wore the same shoe, and it was a black tennis shoe, and they were high tops, and that's all everybody wore. Well, the story goes that the Chuck Taylor whites had just come out. And Mr. McCracken goes down and buys the shoes and brings them back. And Shelburne, of course, takes the floor to play Terre Haute Garfield in brand-new Chuck Taylor white tennis shoes. It didn't help in their game, I don't think. They lost 64-47. But, you know, that was one of those things where nobody really cared. It kind of put Shelburne on the map. But the interesting thing is that Coach McCracken never let Weekly or Shelburne High School reimburse him for the shoes. He thought that much of Mr. Weekly. So then they came back in 1949, and you're going to recognize that year. In 1949, he had a heck of a team. And he won the sectional, and he advanced to the regional, where guess who he played in the first game? The Jasper Wildcats, who, as everybody knows, would go on to become the state champs that year. But and they defeated Shelburne in what many of the old-timers tell me was a heck of a ball game. I think it wound up to be the margin wound up to be 8 or 9 points, but everybody tells me it was nip and tuck and a one-point game all the way till right at the end, and Jasper cashed in on their free throws and kind of stretched the margin out. But many of the old-timers feel that that was the best basketball team that Shelburne ever had in 1949. They lost just two games. They lost to Attica in the Wabash Valley Finals and then to Jasper, who was the state champion. So Mr. Weekly, we feel like, is certainly deserving of being into the Hall of Fame, and we did go up and present his case. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about it today is because those nominations or inductions will be released around Thanksgiving. And, boy, if you get a chance to talk to any of the voting members or anybody, please put in a plug for Coach Weekly. We really feel like that he was kind of not really overlooked, but kind of became in that inactive file, and we feel like he has a great story to tell. One thing that you'll, I think, find interesting as in a coaching standpoint, as far as what I can tell, I've done a lot of research on this. I'm not going to say he was the first coach in the state of Indiana, but he was probably the first coach in the Wabash Valley to actually utilize training films. And he used his 1962 sectional players, sectional championship players of North Central, to actually make training films. And I've got one on a CD, and when I see you sometime, I'll make you a present of it. They're pretty interesting. But I wanted to talk that little bit about basketball and kind of bring that in and let people know what and if you've never been to the Hall of Fame, and I'm sure you have, it's a great trip. My gosh, take the kids. I think it's $5 for adults and $3 for children or something like that. And it's just a tremendous trip. It's a little bit of a drive to Newcastle, but while you're there, you can check out the world's largest high school basketball gym and then take 10 minutes to run over to Knightsville, which is the next exit back toward Indianapolis. And you can actually go in the gym where Hoosiers was shot. And we did that on this trip, Kenny. And believe it or not, I made a couple of baskets in the old Hickory gym there.
Brent, I have no doubt that you made some baskets. I just wonder if they were layups or you weren't dunking the ball, I'm sure.
No, I wasn't doing that. No. I did. It
really is timely that you talk about Coach Weekly, and there are so many wonderful coaches, not just head coaches, but assistant coaches that have done so much for Indiana high school basketball. And I think when class basketball came in and there was some, you know, some controversy and some people fell away, I think we lost the focus, the funnel, what I call the funnel, where everybody kind of moved towards basketball, the high school, the state finals, and then on into the Hall of Fame and those types of things. I took a team up to the Hall of Fame Classic. We toured the Hall of Fame Museum at the time. It is a wonderful place to go. But just what you told me about Coach Weekly has me stirred, and I'm going to start looking up some history on that and what Shelburne was able to do in that area on a consistent basis under his direction is phenomenal. And I don't look at just his 430-plus wins. I look at that overall record of wins and losses, and I've got to believe there's not an any more deserving candidate for the Hall of Fame than Coach Weekly.
Well, Kenny, I appreciate that. We certainly feel that that way. There are 96 deceased members that are actually on their list up there. And here's the thing, Kenny, they're all deserving. I've looked that list over. Mr. Weekly is, he's probably in the top probably 10 people that are on that list. But I think it's just a wonderful thing that they do to recognize the people. But the one thing that is a little bit, and it's not a problem, it's just the way they work, they only pick one deceased member to go in out of their 14 or 15 that they induct every year. And that makes it very, very difficult because you're really limited. And so we got a 1 in 96 chance. And there are other people, don't get me wrong, that are just as deserving. But we feel like his story and what he did for Shelburne and for Sullivan County basketball, just like you say. And it's kind of interesting, Kenny. He actually, his record came with 4 years served in the military during World War II. So some of the prime years that he would have been coaching, he lost. Otherwise, you know, you put those in with his averages, and he's probably knocking at 500 wins. But he's not the only one. There are other guys that have done that too. I do know that a couple of years ago they put in a guy, and you'll remember this name, a guy from Linton who coached for years, and I can remember him being the basketball coach when I was a young kid, first started going to basketball games. But his name was Oliphant, Mr. Oliphant. And I believe that his grandson played on that great L&M team that you guys played, I believe, when you were at WC. Didn't you play them at the Hatchet House and pack the house one night or something like that? So they do make special occasions to put some people in, and they used that centurion because he had been over 100 years. It had been over 100 years since his birth. And in a couple of years, Mr. Weekly will fall into that category as well. But we certainly would like to, you know, would like to think that he can get in this year. But you just don't know what's going to happen.
Well, Brent, thank you for coming on as we end this segment. And I think we'll pick up the Hall of Fame down the stretch or down the road a little bit. I think it's worthy talking about and maybe talk to some of the people up there. And coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking with Bill Somm. He's our scout up in the Indianapolis region. And we're going to go to break right now. You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Then as of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
And now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to get back on to Indiana High School playoff discussion. And joining us now is former Cathedral assistant, NCAA man, and he's our scout in the Indianapolis region when it comes to high school football. And we're going to be talking with Bill Somm. Mr. Bill Somm, are you with us?
Good morning, Kenny. How are you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. We've had another great show, but it's going to get even better as we talk a little bit about what's going on in the Indianapolis area as far as football is concerned. A number of great games last weekend, moving some people on and ending some seasons as well. And I noticed that Ben Davis is out. Columbus East continues on, and a team close to your heart, Cathedral, continues to go on. So kind of get us up to date on where things are at up in the Indianapolis region and where they might come together as we move forward in the next week or so.
Well, last weekend really was an upset weekend. You mentioned Ben Davis being out. Pike, who had lost to Ben Davis early in the season, 24-0, beat Ben Davis 35-25 to move on. And Zionsville also beat Brownsburg, and Brownsburg was fully expected to move on. Zionsville beat Brownsburg in the last 25 seconds in that football game. And then the really big one, at least with the big-name schools, is that Warren Central beat Carmel. And Warren Central was only 4-5 at that point in the season, and they were able to upset Carmel in three overtimes. So last weekend was a scary weekend for the big boys in 5A, but it certainly makes for a great weekend this weekend.
Yeah, and as we drop down into 4A, and I see Columbus East still alive, Ron Colley beats Plainfield pretty handily. Mount Vernon, which you talked about last week, huge win over New Pal, and then Cathedral continues to march along.
Well, that's right. 4A is getting very, very interesting. There's a big, big game this weekend. Ron Colley at Greenwood. Ron Colley is 8-2. Greenwood is 9-1. That's going to be a really, really good football game. I think most people, just because of the great experience of tradition at Ron Colley, are kind of picking Ron Colley there. But it is going to be, I think we're going to see a very close score there. So that everyone's waiting on that outcome. We did talk about Mount Vernon last week. I think they could be a scary team at 4A. They're very well coached, and they played Pendleton Heights this weekend, and I would expect Mount Vernon to prevail in that game. Columbus East, as you said, continues to roll on, and the young men at Cathedral prevailed last weekend against Northview, which I felt a little bit bad for the Northview kids. They, you know, they came a long way from Brazil, and they started a freshman, a quarterback. They actually played about eight or nine freshmen, and that score ended up 62-0.
Tell us a little bit about the Cathedral game.
Well, you know, it was played at Lawrence North High School. We scored on our first, I think, five possessions. It was a good football game for Cathedral from the standpoint that every kid, all 75 kids, got to play. You know, the dress for the game. Our starters, our offensive starters, I think, played 17 football plays. So it was. We left the game healthy. We left the game with some confidence. Now we go on up to Lebanon. Just an interesting sidebar on tonight's Cathedral game at Lebanon, which shows, at least for guys in my era, the times have really changed. This is Cathedral's first football game on grass this year, going up to Lebanon. So you don't expect that to be a major problem, but it's just interesting that in game 11, it's the first game that those young men at Cathedral will be playing on grass. And it is raining all day up here, so it could be interesting.
Well, it looks like Columbus East is still a strong force in 4A. It looks like they haven't dropped missed a beat this year. So, I mean, they've had to replace some people at Columbus East, but yet they still seem to keep moving forward.
Well, yes. Obviously, they replaced their quarterback, which was a very important component to last year's team. But they have great tradition there, and you're right. They're continuing on. They play Connersville tonight, and then they'll play the winner of Richmond and Franklin County, and it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. But I think the tradition at Columbus East helps them early in the tournament. Again, I will keep talking about Mount Vernon. Of course, I would suggest that Cathedral is going to be a pretty good opponent for whoever they meet up in next week. And I would suspect that if Cathedral prevails tonight, one of the better games in the state potentially could be Cathedral versus Ron Colley next weekend.
Well, I know one of the big rivals of Chittard, at least during the season, you've got our Cathedral is Chittard, and Chittard 8-2 beat Danville 48-20. In 3A, do they look to be the class of that group in 3A, or do you see somebody looming that others might not be aware of? I know Jimtown's 10-0, and you've got some other teams. What are your thoughts on Chittard this year?
Chittard's pretty good. Chittard has won the sectional the last 11 straight years. They played Rebuff tonight, I don't think it's going to be an issue with them playing Brebeuf. They beat Brebeuf 27-0 in week one earlier this year. Brebeuf is 8-2. Chittard is 8-2. But Chittard, great, great program. As I said, 11 straight sectional championships. They beat Cathedral this year, and they played better than Cathedral on that particular weekend. It was the first time in 7 years that Chittard beat Cathedral. So I would tell you that Chittard continues to be the class in 3A.
And when you look down at 2A, obviously Ritter undefeated in the Indianapolis area. Modern Day down south is a solid team, although they are going to play a tough North Posey team coming up who's undefeated. You've got always better than what their record is if they have a loss. They're 7-3, Fort Wayne Lures. And Lures always seems to bring a strong, quick team into the tournament. Would you? How do you compare a Ritter team to a Lures team this year?
Well, obviously, without getting into the specifics, Lures has had some controversy this year, so I would think they're still trying to work through their head coaching change. I would think that would have some impact as the tournament progresses. Ritter is 10-0. They play Speedway, who's 7-3. But having said that, Ritter beat Speedway 62-38 in, I think, week three or week four. So I would suspect that Ritter will prevail against Speedway tonight. Lurs, as you know, has great, great, great tradition. But we're talking Ritter and Lurs, and I think those are probably the class of 2A.
Well, I don't mean to slight 1A. I know Lafayette Catholic looks strong in there. You've got Cecina, who's pretty solid. So you've got some good teams there. But you brought something up last week that I wanted to just touch as we get ready to close this segment out. You talked about recruits changing their minds, pulling their verbal commitments and things like that. And you mentioned the force of social networking, the tweeting between recruits. Have you seen any more of that in the last week? Has there been any more information out on recruits and the tweeting? And what is your overall thought process on how social networking is, taking the recruiting out of the hands of the coaches in a way and really putting it down to the players themselves?
Well, it is. It's a bit controversial. It's a bit troubling, at least from my standpoint, just from what I used to do for a living. This week in particular, one of the young men that we mentioned last week, David Kenny, who decommitted to Iowa, actually committed to IU. So it was quite a coup for IU this week. David Kenny is a highly ranked 6'2", 250-pound defensive lineman out of Pike High School. And obviously he'll continue to play this evening due to their winning last weekend. But he decommitted from Iowa and has committed to IU. Some of those other kids haven't quite made their decision yet, at least what I'm familiar with. I do think the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, I think it all plays a part in this. I think recruits probably talk more to each other now than they ever have. And then I think there's so much pressure, Coach, on these kids. Now we're talking about the great, great ones to commit as sophomores and junior, whether it's basketball or football. In basketball, you even see freshmen committing. I think there's so much pressure on them to commit, and they do it, and then they start to mature over a year or two, and maybe there's even coaching changes and win-loss changes, and I think they step back, I think it's frustrating for coaches and fans, but, you know, kid's got to go where he's going to be successful academically first. But I think, to me, the number one thing is these kids are committing too early.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that's something that you and I are going to talk about in some future show. And Bill, as we end this segment, I just really appreciate getting your information, your insight in the Indianapolis area, and keep on keeping track of what's going on up there, because I think it's very important, especially as we go through these football playoffs. The southern part of the state is going to start to hit those Indianapolis schools when we get to that semi-state level on these playoffs. So that's just around the corner. And I think it's important for our listeners, whether they're in Indiana or around the country with our podcast, to know what's going on in the Indianapolis area. Because let's face it, Indianapolis is one of the great sports towns, and there are a lot of good athletes coming out.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
We'll talk to you next week. We're going to take it to break. You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. Buy a fence in October and enjoy 90 days same as cash. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Hey, water boy!
Yes, Mr. Coach, for you.
You're fired!
Okay.
And now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back as we come back from a little water boy snippet.
And we're back on the Coach K.
And that was classic.
Did you ever fire a water boy in your time, Kenny?
Well, I'll tell you what, I felt like a water boy a few times. I'll tell you what, I always had great student managers. They always went above and beyond. They were wonderful to work with. And I always said at the beginning of the season, with my student team managers. You're just as important as the guys that are putting on the uniform, because what they were doing behind the scenes allowed us to get things done on the court. Example would be Brent Weibel talking about the fact that Shelburne showed up at a game in Terre Haute without their tennis shoes. So whether that was a manager's fault, I don't know. But I love the snippets, Joe. You do a great job with those.
Thanks a lot. And now, you know, let's talk a little Evansville football. And on the line, we have Chris Goodman. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
It's the Goody Man, Chris Goodman. and most of our listeners will remember him from the sports that he did on the Evansville stations. And now he's doing local high school football on Friday nights. And we in the Evansville area, and that's why we've got Chris on. And we're going to pick his brain a little bit on some of the games coming up. Chris, let's start out with North at Jeffersonville, North 5-4. Coach Wilson taking his team to Jeffersonville, 7-3.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at this, and, you know, we don't see Jeffersonville an awful lot, but I was looking at their last two games, and they've scored like 129 points, 67 in one game, 62 in the other, but they've given up 82 points. And North's a team that can score a lot of points. They've got a lot of talent. Blake Howell, really like him. He's a good running back and a 1,000-yard rusher. They got Max Mooney at quarterback. They got a good fullback, Mike Johnson. They've got four losses, three of those losses to Modern-day Castle and Wrights, the other one to Henderson County. So you're talking about some pretty good competition. You know, when you get those four losses, they've won the games probably they're supposed to. They beat a Central team that many might not have expected North to win that game. But here's a team that hasn't won a sectional since the year 2000. Of course, you remember probably them going to state back in 1995 with Deke Cooper and Kareem Neighbors. But it's a much different team. The caliber of athlete probably not up to those 1995 teams. But I think North has done pretty well this season. And a little to be 5-4, I think that's pretty good for them this year in a building year. They're playing at Jeff. Jeff's 7-3. I mean, it's hard to know what you're going up for. I mean, kind of like when we go, or the folks in DuBois County go up to Indianapolis, you don't really know what to expect with those teams. We don't see Jeffersonville an awful lot. So hard to know what to expect. I would expect a pretty high-scoring shootout just from the past indication of what these teams have scored.
Well, and from North, you know, they have their new stadium. I'm sure that they'd like to continue on and get some opportunities to play in Bundred Stadium. We go on to Bedford North Lawrence, 5-5, at Castle, 10-0, and I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that seeing Castle play big, strong, solid quarterback. Coach has got those guys playing at the Castle level that we remember from years ago.
Yeah, Doug Hurt has done just a phenomenal job. He's 56-25 in 7 years there, and you talked about a good quarterback. Mitch Gillis is one of the best in the area, and then he's got a great receiver core. He's got John Mark Anderson, Joe Redburn, Cameron Paris, who I think just makes some spectacular catches. We've seen them three times in our local 7 home team Friday game of the week this year, and they have just been phenomenal every game. Andrew Finch is a 1,000-yard rusher. You throw that on top of a great offensive and a great defensive line, and this is a team, and I get the question a lot around the Evansville area. You know, I'm playing pickup basketball, and people are asking me, is Castle really, really that good? And my answer is always, yes, they are that good, but there's always a but, and my but is they could be one of the best Evansville area teams in the past decade, but they still might not win state, because once they go up there, they're going to be playing this competition, these schools with huge enrollments, and I hate to say that, and I hope certainly they win the state title, and I think they're capable if they play a great game, but you know, when you're playing competition like that and you're in the higher classes, yes, they are awesome, but will they win state? It's just kind of hard to tell. Both of these teams beat Floyd Central by about the same score, and I don't know if you can usually go with that score levels as far as that. And I haven't seen Bedford. Bedford's 5-5, so it's hard to know what would happen in that one.
Well, I think Castle will be a tough, tough team to beat, at least through the first three, four rounds of the tournament. Then in Class 4A, Sectional 16, we have Evansville Central under Coach Owens and at Wrights, 7-3. And it looks like to me you've got a Wrights team that's a tale of a season. They started out, they struggled, but they seem to be peaking at the right time. And you got a central team that I think a coach has done a great job with. They seem to be athletic. They've stubbed their toe a couple times, but they are very capable of winning.
Yeah, and I think the irony in this one is that Wright's really, after they played Central, and you guys probably had the same situation during a Lightning delay, they were playing Central, and they were down huge at the half. They go into a Lightning delay, they finish the game on Saturday, they regroup, they don't win that game, they lose 36-31, but since that point, they have won six games in a row. You're talking about a Wright's team that started 1-3 to start the season. That just, I mean, that absolutely never happens. Now they're 7-3. Central's kind of been up and down. Their losses, of course, are to, you know, some pretty good teams. They have three losses on the season. They lost to Modern Day. They lost to Castle. They lost to North in what's usually a rivalry game. So, you know, it's hard to know what to expect. I think that game could be one of the more interesting games of the night. I had circled North Posey and Modern Day, and that's the game we're doing. I know we're going to talk about it in a second. But Central at Wright, if you're going to that one, I think you could get your money's worth out of that one as well.
Now, Chris, you know, you did say Wright did start at 1-3. And have they made any personnel changes, or what exactly had them gel into what they've done the rest of the season?
You know, I think they've learned to pass the ball a little better. Their offense is a little more open. Maybe they were going to Keandre Vaughn a little too much early in the season, you know, with the run game and trying to establish the run game. And I think Drew Johnston has matured a quarterback, and he looks a lot better in the games, at least that I've seen. They just walloped Madison last week, 56-7. And really, since that loss to Central, I think it's one of those situations where you got a group of kids that probably just got together and had a team meeting and probably decided they didn't want their season to end this way. They didn't want to be a under 500 team. That's not the way Wright's football normally is. And they've kind of regrouped and rebuilt. And obviously, the evidence shows that they're a pretty darn good football team heading into tonight's game against Central.
Okay, on paper, we've in sectional 24, class 3A. On paper, we've got a couple of good games. We've got Vincennes Lincoln 8-2 at Gibson Southern 8-2, and we have another Coach Hart in the area, and he's done a great job. And then Washington at Memorial. Let's start with Lincoln and Gibson Southern. Gibson Southern has probably surprised quite a few people.
Yeah, you know, I think Nick Hart has done just a fantastic job there, and of course, he's the son of a former Wright's head coach, John Hart, who was also at Mount Carmel, and we had a chance to interview John throughout the years. He was always a media favorite because not only did he was always very hospitable, but he always would say something funny in his sound bites during the interviews and was always a lot of fun to be around. So I'm sure Nick's kind of the same way. He played quarterback at Wright's, and he's driven to be a successful coach, and he's done some fantastic things. And then on the other hand, you got Vincennes Lincoln, who just, I think they lost to Jasper 7-0, correct me if I'm wrong, but a very defensive-oriented team. So the Alices are much, much better this year. So I think that game could certainly go either way. Gibson Southern, it probably, I hate to say it, means more to anybody than the other team because you never know it. I mean, it always depends on what's in your heart. But I think Gibson Southern would love nothing more than to win a sectional title. I mean, you could just imagine what it would do for that school that is, it hasn't happened in so long, if ever. I don't have the stats in front of me.
Well, and then the second game in sectional 24, Washington 4-6 at Evansville, Wright's Memorial 3-7 at Enloe Field. Now, Memorial, I think coming into the season, there were a lot of expectations. They had solid quarterback back in Hurley. They had a strong running back in McKinley Warren.
I do that too.
but I think the concern, when I looked at them on paper, were their offensive and defensive lines. They seemed a little small, a little underweight. You hope you're quick enough, fast enough to make up for those things. But playing in the city this year, the competition was pretty fierce. So that 3-7 record might be a little misleading on paper when it comes to the 3A matchup with Washington.
Yeah, and we actually did the Memorial game last week in our Home Team Friday game of the week, and they beat Princeton 47-3. They kind of came out in the third quarter and just, I mean, it was a close game, and they kind of broke it open, and you could kind of tell some of that experience has helped them. Talking to the Memorial stats guy earlier before that game, Mike Scavara, and he told me that they lost three linemen, and you can only imagine when players are playing both ways, how much that would affect you if you lose three linemen to injury at some point during the season. Now, here's Memorial now is maturing, and some of those players that are getting in there are getting some experience. They beat Princeton 47-3, and I said that you probably shouldn't, you know, take like scores, but Washington's a team that lost to Princeton during the regular season. So if you look at that, you would think Memorial would get the edge in this contest. I did that game last year in the sectionals, and Memorial won quite decisively. So I think the Tigers probably have a pretty good route tonight to move on and further their chances in the sectional.
Well, that'll be an interesting matchup if Memorial moves on, because they'll face either Gibson Southern or Vincennes Lincoln, and I think it'll be both solid teams to go up against. Class 2A, we've got undefeated North Posey under their legendary coach, and they're going to take on another legendary coach and program in Mater Dei, 8-2. And Chris, I really think it's been interesting. Mater Dei looks so strong through 90% of the season, stubbed their toe a little bit with turnovers against Wright in what was a great game to watch. And then really had a battle on their hands at Southridge, which is usually a pretty solid game, but I've got to be honest, I didn't expect it to be that close. So North Posey at Mater Dei.
Yeah, you know, Mater Dei, like you said, started off 5-0, and this, by the way, is our home team Friday game of the week tonight, live on Local 7 at 7, but that's the game I'll be doing play-by-play for. But I am so excited to see these teams, and like you said, I mean, you just can't get any better with class of coaches, and Joe Jinglebaugh and Mike Gable. I mean, both of these guys have won tons of games. Both of them have fantastic teams. You can say Mater Dei stubbed their toe a little bit, but I think if you're playing Castle and you're playing Wrights towards the end of the season, those are games that are not always going to be winnable when you're a 2A team. You don't have the enrollment that some of those schools do, and certainly they want to win those games, but it could go either way. And then you get North Posey. I did a game last year when they played Heritage Hills, and I saw those teams. A lot of those kids were juniors and sophomores, and you kind of knew something special was developing for the Vikings, that they would have a pretty good team this year. And they got a great runner in Wes Harness. Here's a guy who had 271 yards rushing a couple of weeks ago. And then Mater Dei offensively, I mean, you look at those, you got the Hearts kids, you got they're part of triplets, Jason Jacob, their sister even plays sports, and then Nolan Gable's a fantastic runner. I think one of the defining things for Mater Dei, even in a loss, they lost to Castle. We did that game on the air. They lost 35-21. But the way they ran the ball against such a solid defensive line at Castle, Nolan Gable had a huge, huge game in the rain. It was kind of like it is tonight, or going to be tonight. And I think the way that they ran that ball could be a huge factor. And North Posey is going to have to shut down that running game if they're going to win tonight against Mater Dei in the rain.
Yeah, I think it's really going to be interesting and see how the weather does affect some of these teams, especially where a team may be strong on the passing game and or on the running game. In sectional 40, Class A, we've got Tecumseh still alive at North Davies, and Perry Central 7-3 at another undefeated Linton team. And Linton, I know they're kind of out of our area a little bit when you're talking about Evansville, but they've had a strong program, and it's good to see the Tecumseh Braves back on track where they're having that football success.
Yeah, it seems like Tecumseh kind of more than probably any of the teams, and maybe that's indicative of being a Class A team, but it seems like they are so cyclical that they every once in a while they have just a great group of seniors in there, and when they do, they're good in basketball, baseball, and football, not just one sport, but it seems like they just have that every 3 or 4 years. They have that team that just really can get things done on the Class A level. And Perry Central, I mean, the Commodores, I mean, those guys are always around. I mean, they always have great years year in and year out, and it's obviously going to be a tough road to hoe up there at Linton tonight for them.
Well, it will be interesting, and we look forward to talking to you again next week, Chris. But before we end the segment, you know, where many of our listeners used to seeing you do the sports, the Goody Awards. We've heard you on the Game of the Week for high school football. Tell us a little bit about what else you're doing right now.
I actually have an office in Newburgh across from the Knob Hill Restaurant, and I am an American Family Insurance Agency owner. And I've been doing that for about a year, still freelancing and doing some stuff on the side for Local 7. In fact, my wife is a producer that works over at Channel 7, so they allow me to do some high school football games every Friday night, and it's been really, really fun to kind of stay in TV on my own terms, but not be in TV, if you know what I mean, because I got a couple of little ones. I got a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, Jacob and Cameron. And I, at some point when I was working at Channel 14, my last sports anchor job, I had these kids and I was coming home at night and I was just like, man, I need to be home with these kids instead of being on the air at 10:30 or 11 o'clock. And that kind of was a defining moment for me to head into insurance. I'm kind of following and blazing the same path that Dean Webster did. I'm a copycat. So.
Yeah, well, Dino, we'll probably have Dino on at some point. Well,
and the Ken Schulteis path. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention copying your path as well. You got to follow the greats, right?
Chris, good stuff. It was great having you. Hope you come back next week and give us a little bit more insight on the Evansville area football.
Okay. Hey, let me know anytime. And you know what tonight reminds me of, just by the way? Do you remember, you guys remember that Jasper at Central game? Except
yes,
we have turf.
Yes.
We have turf now, but this is the same exact sectional weather during that game, and that was the muddiest game I have ever covered. And my shoes, I had to throw away my shoes that night. They were so muddy over at Central Stadium. Jasper won, obviously, but it kind of reminds me of that tonight. And thank goodness some people have turf, but I know you guys are mudders, the Wildcats up there, so I know that's probably that always plays, not that you need help, but I know that plays into a big factor there for them.
Well, thanks, Chris, and we look forward to talking to you next week as we go to break. We'll come back and talk some more sports. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
That's right!
And it's time for our Glory Days segment, and joining us this week is Heritage Hills great, Purdue great, NFL football player, John Goldsberry. John, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing just wonderful.
John, I'll tell you what, I was kind of listening to the boss, the Glory Days song coming in, and getting ready for you, and I got to tell you, I was doing a little movement in here on my chair, a little dance move as I'm sitting in my chair waiting for you.
Well, you know, as Boiler Joe there could probably tell you, you know, I like a little enthusiasm every once in a while, so I'm glad you're excited.
You know, John, it's really is good to have you. And before we get into a little bit of your career on the football field and high school at Heritage Hills and Purdue, and then your step forward to the NFL, tell us a little bit about where you're at now, what's going on in your life.
Well, I'm married. I've got two great kids, a 4-year-old, a 1-year-old, and we just moved back to Santa Claus, Indiana 2 years ago, and I'm actually working in Jasper, Indiana with National Office Furniture.
Well, and it's great to have you back in the area, and I'll tell you, you and I don't really know each other personally, but we are Facebook connected, and I do follow the different posts and things that you have. You're very involved in your community, in the Santa Claus and Heritage Hills High School area, and I think that's wonderful when people come back and they start to give back. And it's not even really giving back. It's just reconnecting and continuing on the tradition of what people did for you and now you're doing for the young people.
Yeah, you know, it really is. It's a pay it forward back to the community, the people involved, you know, that helped me come up in a good situation with a lot of opportunities and you know, being able to feed off of the energy in the community and go out there and be successful. And it's very important to me that I do the same thing to help the kids out today. You know, sitting in the locker room back in 1998, 1999 at Heritage Hills in Lincoln City, seeing Ken Dilger walk into the locker room was, was just crazy for all of us high school kids. You know, this guy's in the NFL. He's the big time. You know, having that, you know, that type of personality come into your life at such a young age makes a big difference, creates a lot of motivation, and really keeps you on the right track. So I try to, you know, do my best to reach out to the kids as well in the community and kind of pay it forward as well.
Now, John, you know, I got a statement and then a question, okay? First of all, the statement, I think Jet would look great in gold and black in high school and in college.
I think there's a few people here in the office that'll agree with you.
And also, you know, you played for two great coaches. You played for Bob Clayton. You played for Joe Tiller. Tell us a little bit about the similarities and differences in the two.
Well, you know, as you both know, most likely, you know, I know Boiler Joe knows. I don't know how much Ken followed Joe Tiller, but obviously you both know Clayton as well. They're both very hard-nosed. They're very disciplined. They drive discipline. They drive character. They drive, you know, effort. They want to see a lot of effort. They take average guys, average Joes, and draw every bit of talent out of them, every bit of effort out of them, and turn them into great people and great football players. And I think that's probably the closest connection I see between the two. Obviously, they've both been very successful by taking that approach.
Well, John, I can tell you that when it comes to coaches, I follow just about everybody I can, because I think, especially when I was coaching, whether it was basketball, football, baseball, whatever it is, you can take a little bit from everybody to build your philosophy and the direction you want to go. Now, when you look at Coach Tiller and you look at Coach Clayton, who both of them phenomenal, and I agree, they find a way to squeeze it out of you. They help you find, and I think this is what great coaches do, and sometimes people don't like it, but they help you find that little extra inside of you that you didn't know you have. But they're a little different. Coach Tiller liked that passing style, and maybe Coach Clayton did too, I'm not sure, but it seemed like he was more focused with the run, and that could have been from the talent level. So was there any big change or difference you had to make when you went from high school to college as far as a philosophy style on the field?
Not so much for my specific role. You know, as you guys know, in high school, we were set up in the wishbone. We're run, pounded all day long. I can think of a couple high school football games, you know, especially my senior year, where I don't think we threw the ball one play the entire game. And, you know, it's not very common. It's not going to happen often. And obviously you want to be able to pass the ball if you need to. But we were, you know, we had a great set of running backs. Of course, we, you know, throughout my high school career, we had Jade Winchell at quarterback. We had Jay Cutler at quarterback. We had some good running backs next to me, and the Crest boys, the Shores, the Detzers, you name it, Cole Seifrig. You know, he was a little younger than I was, but he's another guy, another big name. But we had a tremendous ground attack. And then, of course, you know, I leave Heritage Hills and I go to basketball on grass up in West Lafayette, and we got Drew Brees and Kyle Orton and Brandon Kearse, and these guys are slinging the ball left and right 80, 90 times a game. So it was definitely different from a team aspect, but, of course, you know, when you're a fullback, you're a fullback. So I went up there and played some fullback, played some linebacker, and we definitely did a lot more running in practice, that's for sure. You know, you got a lot of plays, a lot of no huddle, 2 minute. So it was a little bit different from that aspect. But as far as my specific role went, you know, it was straight up, play hard, take out the guy you need to take out. And then, of course, on special teams, just set your hair on fire and get crazy and go out and make plays. So
now, John, you know, you said you played with Jay Cutler, you know, probably, you know, you get on the internet, and you read all the internet banner, and everyone in the world seems to know him and know what kind of person he is. What would you tell people? You know, I know you know Jay real well. What would you tell people the kind of person he is versus the kind of person he's portrayed by on internet message boards?
Well, I definitely got a crack up. I know some of you guys and a lot of people listening on Monday night saw the faces of Jay Cutler, you know, and they showed a lot of smirks and whatnot on there of him. And, the perception is that Jay doesn't care and that Jay, you know, doesn't like people and whatever. The reality is Jay is focused on being one of the best quarterbacks and focused on winning a Super Bowl. And, you know, he's not into the media and all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes he does come off with a negative look, but Jay's going to fight every battle he can on that field and for his players. He's, you know, if you're not doing something right, he's going to let you know about it. And we've seen that this year. And some people take that as a positive, some take it as a negative, but as you guys know, there's always opinions and everybody's got those and their opinions. But if you ask anybody on that Chicago Bears team or any former player at Vanderbilt, Heritage Hills, you name it, Jay's a fighter. He's a leader. He's going to go out and play his butt off. And if you know Jay and you sit down and talk with him personally, he's a good guy. You know, they showed the faces of Jay Cutler before that game. What they didn't show was the fact that he flew a family of three up from Jacksonville that just had a family member murdered the week before. So they were big Bears fans, and Jay took time to speak with them, arrange a flight, get them up to the game, and let them have a little time to get their minds off of what had just happened in their life. So little things like that. Of course, all his foundation, the diabetes thing, he's touching a lot of lives. And, you know, just because you don't see it right there on camera doesn't mean he's not a good guy.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing for the athlete, John, and really anybody in profession where they're out exposed to the media, exposed to TV, whatever it might be, is that the person that they are isn't always being seen or projected, and somebody can write something or somebody can say something that has no knowledge of the individual, and people take it as gospel, and it's unfortunate, but it's people like you and friends of the Scott Rolands and the Cutlers and the people like that. We know where they come from, and we know what kind of people that they really are.
Yeah, and you know, perception is reality, and I do give Jay some flack. You know, I remember a while back when he came in for his charity, I was like, man, can you just smile on national TV every once in a while? Just give me a break here, you know, because I'm the NFL guy back home to a lot of people, and they want to know, you know, because I have that connection, they think I know what Jay's doing on a daily basis. Not really a reality, but I kind of know and understand the process and the schedule he's going through and things like that. But as far as what he's doing on a daily basis, I don't know. What I do know is Jay isn't what you see on TV all of the time. He's a good guy. He plays hard, and he's going to win a championship, and he's focused on that. You know, not to throw you guys under the bus at all, but the media, sometimes they ask some questions he doesn't want to answer. Nobody else wants to answer. And some guys play those questions off easily, and Jay will just tell them no. He'll just look at him and tell him no, I don't want to answer it. Or I don't have an answer, or don't ask me that question. You know, he's pretty straight up with people, and that's just Jay. That's how he is.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I know just coaching at Washington Catholic, then at Jasper on the high school basketball level, you know, sports are important in Southern Indiana. So you got two or three media people coming at you. He's got 10 times that coming at you after a game. When you're competing, it's not that easy to go from the competitive, hard-nosed nature, trying to be the best you can be, trying to get your kids to play the best they can play, to nice, soft-spoken after a game. So, you know, that's just tough for anybody. But John, take us on a little bit of a journey. I really like our listeners to get a feel. You go to Purdue. You have a great career. I mean, you don't have to tell us you did. Academic All Big Ten, leadership award winner, all kinds of good things happened for you. And now you've got the chance that every young boy playing athletics wants, and that's an opportunity to go to the next level, the professional level. Can you take us on just a quick journey in the past of you end up college, and now the opportunity may come to go to the NFL. What was the process like? What did you go through mentally, and what were the differences for you physically as you got there?
Well, I think it was about my junior year I started realizing that I had a really good opportunity. My junior year at Purdue, I had a good opportunity to go into the NFL, especially from a special team standpoint. And then also just being a diverse player, being able to play linebacker, fullback, a little bit of H-back, things like that. You know, bringing that versatility to the field was a big positive from my standpoint, and I got a lot of looks from pro scouts. And then, you know, after your senior year, you do a lot of training there, or you can actually travel out. Some guys will go to, you know, remote locations to work out and things like that. I decided to stay at Purdue and work out with Jim Lathrop. I always had a great connection with him. Had great results from all the workouts, obviously, at Purdue. And so I opted to stay at Purdue and work out. And then we had our Purdue Pro Day, and that's when all your scouts come in. And granted, I wasn't one of the top fullbacks in the nation or anything like that, because of the opportunity to run the ball and things like that. You know, when you're throwing the ball 80 times a game, fullback's not really the ideal position to be on the field if you're looking to get national attention. So, but, you know, as you guys know, I'm a team guy. I don't care. I just want to win football games, and we did a lot of that at Purdue, and that's all that matters. But from a national standpoint, I wasn't one of those guys getting invited to the combine, so the pro day was all I had to show myself. Luckily, I had, you know, some good workouts with Jim, and the pro day turned out really well and got a lot of attention. And that turned into, I believe it was 3 or 4 pre-draft visits with the Packers, the Lions, the Bengals. The Buffalo Bills had called me. I got to speak with Bill Belichick on the phone. He was interested in me. You know, and after that good pro day and the pre-draft visits, there was word out that, you know, I could possibly go in the late 6th round, things like that floating around. From my standpoint, I was just looking for an opportunity, just wanted to be able to have an opportunity to go somewhere and prove myself. You know, I did not get drafted, but as soon as that draft ended, it was crazy. My phone was ringing off the hook. You know, you got all these teams calling, wanting you to come in as a free agent and sign with them. Turned out the best opportunity I had, or what seemed to be the best for me, was in Buffalo with the Bills. And, you know, they had the number one special teams in the NFL that year under Bobby April, I believe, who is with Philadelphia right now. Is that correct? Special teams coach, do you guys know?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. He's floated around a little bit, but, you know, he was one of the top special team coaches in the NFL at that time, which is, you know, one of the main reasons I made it there and made it to that level was because of special teams play. And so that was a great opportunity for me. Had a 10-year fullback, Damon Shelton was his name, so a great opportunity to learn from a veteran fullback as well who was kind of on his way out. Got into camp, was able to prove myself enough to make the practice squad that first year, and from there on out, you know, I was able to make the 53-man roster the last few games of the season back in 2005, and then I ran into some injuries and things like that that kind of had me hopping around from Buffalo to Tampa to Chicago. Had some good opportunities to play, but unfortunately I just couldn't stay healthy, and that was kind of the end of my career.
Now, John, I know you love football, but I also know you love hunting.
I do. And it's deer season.
That's right. Here's a question. Who has the best hunting, Santa Claus, West Lafayette, Buffalo, Chicago, or Tampa Bay?
I got to go with Santa Claus, Indiana. I'll tell you what, I love Buffalo, New York. It's an outdoorsman paradise, but those bucks just don't grow up there. You know, when you got vineyards instead of cornfields, it's a little bit different. I think they're starving them up there.
But they're more sophisticated.
Yeah, they are. Yes, they are. I'll tell you what, there's some really good deer hunting up in West Lafayette, Indiana, too. You know, the further north you travel, there's some good deer hunting. The problem is it's really tough to find public or private land to hunt on. And if you're hunting public land, you never know who you're going to run into. And it's a little scary at times.
Did you have any hunting buddies that were Boilermakers?
I did. You know, Tom Lang was a good friend of mine. He wasn't on the football team, but he's actually a DNR out. He's on the DNR out in Kansas now, and good friend of mine, big wrestling fan actually. And there was another Purdue wrestler from Alaska that I hunted with quite a bit. A buddy of mine from Rochester, Indiana, Bill Newton, is a big friend of mine, and he's a huge deer hunter as well. And I try to make it up there at least once a year, but with kids, it's been busy. He's got kids of his own now, so you guys know how that process goes. It's tough to get out in the woods when you want to, when you got little kids running around.
Okay, well, John, thanks for joining us today, and hopefully you'll come back and interject on Purdue football, Heritage Hills football in general, and deer hunting. Okay.
Anytime, guys. I appreciate the call, and good luck with the show. It sounds great.
Thank you.
Nice to talk with you, John.
And
all right, guys, have a great day.
We'll be back right after this word from our sponsors.
You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
So what's in the November issue of Jasper Today? The Jasper Life with Mayor Terry Seitz, Sha-na-na, JHS Pops Concert, Football Diaries, U Indies, Adam Kinese, Eye on the Arch, Jordan Jones, Homegrown Business, Grounded, Organic, and Natural Foods, Jasper Icon, Cyril Burge, the Jasper Marching Band Report, and much more. Go to www.jaspertodayonline starting November 1st and click on the magazine cover of the Jasper Train Depot. You can also go to www.jaspertodayonline and read past issues. Jasper Today, taking Jasper into the 21st century as your multimedia magazine about Jasperites.
We are back! That's
we
right.
are back!
We are getting Doug back!
And we're the three best friends that anybody can have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other.
And now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back from the break. I'm Joe Milligan, along with Coach K and Kurt Duxell. We're the three best friends that anybody ever had. What's up, guys?
Hey, guys, what's happening?
Hey, Kurt. I don't know. Are we the three best friends, or is Joe stretching it a little bit right there?
I'm stretching
it. He may be stretching it just a tad.
I don't think I'd have two Hoosier fans as my best friends. So,
hey Kurt, I love this part of the show because we can bounce around from pro to college to high school. But let's go ahead and start with what was at least a very competitive, hard-nosed game. Give us a little review and talk a little bit about that modern day Southridge Raider football game last week.
Oh, it was a great game. Like I told you guys it was going to be. Those two teams seem like they always play good, hard-fought games, and Southridge played modern day and right down to the end. Southridge in the first half alone lost a fumble at the modern day half-yard line going into score. They lost the fumble at the modern day 10 going on in for a score, and they also got a run down to the one-yard line, about a 45-yard run brought back from the one-yard line on a holding penalty. All that alone in the first half, and only trailed at the break 7-0 on a 89-yard run by the modern-day quarterback. Southridge scored on their first possession of the second half to tie the ball game. Modern Day then went up on a 44-yard pass between the Twin Hearts brothers. Southridge then took the ball down the field and scored in the fourth quarter with about 5:20 to go. Modern Day jumped on the extra point. They moved the ball up to the 1.5-yard line where you put it there on the extra point. Southridge decided to go for two, and the tide had turned. The Raiders got it into the end zone. They led at that point 15-14 with 5:20 left to go in the game. Then Modern Day, on just four plays, took the ball down the field, scored, retook the lead, and that was basically the ball game. But if Southridge could have found a way to get a stop after they took that lead, who knows what could have happened. But I know they are lamenting and looking back on the missed opportunities in the first half of that ball game. I mean, they ran it down Modern Day's throat all night long. They held Gable, their fine running back, in check. Hart's throwing the football was only 4 of 21. I mean, the stats lined up for Southridge, but the final score didn't. Again, I know Coach Murphy and those guys look back on those fumbles in the first half, and it was a disappointing way to end their season.
Yeah, and you know, I listened to parts of the game, and it was really interesting, that turnover bug. After, when you look at the whole complete record of the game for Southridge, they did the things that they had to do. They not only were able to control one phase of the game, they controlled both the running and the passing of Modern Day and really put themselves in a great position to win. As you look ahead to this week, I know you've seen North Posey. I'm sure you have. You've got
right.
North Posey and Modern Day matching up in this next round. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, North Posey's very good. They've got a good quarterback, but they also have a very solid running game. That's why I think, as you've seen Wright's run the ball against Modern Day, you've seen Southridge run the ball against Modern Day, and there's no doubt that North Posey can run the football against Modern Day. And I know North Posey has a good defense. Whether they can do what Southridge did and stop the running and the passing, that will remain to be seen. But, Coach and Joe, you guys know, followed enough sports to know, and here's a situation where North Posey, I don't know if they ever have or not, but it's been a while if they have ever beaten Modern Day in one of these playoff games. And I think that weighs on their mind. If they can convince their guys that they can win that ball game and throw all the years past out, and just have that mindset that they can win, I think they can win the ball game. But sometimes that mental hurdle is, you know, looms big. And if Modern Day, or if North Posey, excuse me, can say, hey, we can win this because we've got a better team, but I think they'll be all right. I don't know what Modern Day is going to bring to the table against North Posey, but, again, it may be that mental hurdle, but if they can get by that, I think they'll be all right.
Kurt, when you look at Southridge going forward, I know it's a tough way to end the year. I'm sure they would have liked to moved a little bit ahead, but they got some strong kids. They had some good young people in positions. What do you see about the coming year for Southridge football?
I think they're going to be very good. And, again, you started the sophomore quarterback that you guys have talked about in Stetter. Their top running back at the end of the season was a sophomore. They've got a talented group of defenders that are sophomores led by Brett Nordoff. He has just been a man. He's one of their strongest players, and they're very dedicated to getting stronger and quicker. And I think things look bright. When you've got a program that's rolling, guys want to play in it, and guys want to keep up that tradition. So I don't see that as a problem. You know, on the flip side, though, they do lose a lot of guys. It's easy at the end of the season to throw away some of the seniors and look toward next year, but they had some older guys that contributed a lot to Southridge football, and those guys will be missed. But as the case in any year coming up for Southridge, they're looking forward to it.
Kurt, you know, switching to 4A, we've got Jasper versus Seymour tonight at Seymour. Jasper making the two-hour trip over there to play all the Owls. What's your perspective on that game?
Well, I just like the fact that it's somebody different that the Wildcats are going to face. I mean, you get into that sectional in some places where you play the same team twice, which was the case with Boonville. And I think this is the first ever meeting between Jasper and Seymour. And I think it's you get a different perspective. I mean, you probably scout it better. You probably look at more video and look at it fresher. And just you get more excited about playing somebody that you haven't played before. And, you know, they don't know you. You don't know their tendencies. That's why you need to scout and you need to look at that video. But there's a team in Seymour that puts a lot of points on the board against perhaps a little weaker defenses than they're going to face tonight. But it should be interesting. They like to score points. Anytime you put 63 on the board, that's a lot of points. But I think Nick Eckert and the guys will have something dialed up for Seymour tonight. And we'll see how Jasper does against a little bit more athletic, bigger defense when they have the ball in Seymour.
All right, Kurt, I'm going to switch directions here a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about college football. Looking at the BCS poll, we've got Alabama 1, Florida 2, Kansas State 3, and your Oregon Ducks are number 4 in the BCS poll, but number 2 in the AP Top 25 and USA Today Top 25 poll. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, they're pretty right on that. I mean, until somebody knocks off Alabama and which Mississippi State's going to have that opportunity this week. Mississippi State, they kind of fly under the radar. They're undefeated, but they got to go into T-Town and take on the Crimson Tide, and that'll be a tall order for them. But I like the poll, the way it's shaken down. I mean, you get to these later stages of the season, those bigger games, and it kind of spreads itself out a bit. So what do you think?
Well, I'm still going to say that I think Alabama is the best team in the country. I know that they're not as explosive offensively as people would like to see them, but they just got a shutdown defense, and I think that's strong. I do like Oregon, and you mentioned how explosive they are and how strong they've been. I think it's a pretty solid poll. Now, the big key or big question, I think a big game anyway, if you're you live in Indiana or you just follow nationally, Notre Dame at Oklahoma. You know, I think Notre Dame's got a good team. I'm just a little concerned about Oklahoma's explosiveness offensively. How do you think the Oklahoma-Irish game shapes up?
Well, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Notre Dame is setting themselves up with a good defense this year, with Teo and a few of those other guys, and they're setting themselves up for a game like this. This is going to be a test to see how far that defense has come, because Oklahoma always runs the ball well. They've got a veteran quarterback in Landry Jones, and that guy will throw it all around Memorial Stadium in Norman tomorrow. So, I mean, that's something the Notre Dame defense is going to have to contend with. But on the flip side, Notre Dame offensively, can they score against an Oklahoma defense? And it seems like it's a weekly jockeying. Who's going to be the Notre Dame starting quarterback? Is it going to be Golson? Is it going to be Reese, who seems to bail them out every week? And Kelly said he's going to go with Golson. He's back from his concussion. So I think that's where the game's going to be decided. Can Notre Dame muster up some offense against the Oklahoma defense? And under Bob Stoops, who's a defensive guy, they've always been very good.
And where's the Big Ten in all this? It just seems like Michigan State, even a lot of questions about Ohio State. Purdue played a great game against them last week. Ohio State very, very fortunate to come out of that. Obviously, Urban Meyer did a great job at the end coming up with the right play. But it just seems like the Big Ten has kind of disappeared from really true national contention.
Well, a lot of people talk about the Big Ten not getting the athletes, not getting the speed that these other big-time championship contenders have. And, guys, the team that's slowly and quietly becoming a Big Ten factor, although they won't be a factor in the championship game of the postseason, is Penn State. The guy at Penn State, O'Brien, what he's done to get the morale and get the culture of that program changed, is he's just done a great job, and they're a team that may be the best team in the Big Ten. He's kind of taken those Penn State guys that were kind of held back, if you will, at least offensively, and he's a guy that's from the NFL and guy that is a guy that likes to scheme, and he's put McGloin, the quarterback, and some of those Penn State guys in great position on matchups to win the game offensively so far this season. So I like Penn State if you're going to talk Big Ten football, and of course, as I say that, here comes Ohio State to take them on. So, Coach, when you talk about Penn State, what do you think about the job O'Brien's done? And I said when he got hired with all the mess that was going on and how he was going to keep players, how he was going to recruit, he got to call Crean to see how he handled that whole situation. If he didn't make a call to Crean, I'd be disappointed on how he handled that situation. But it looks like O'Brien did a nice job at getting guys to buy in and playing for Penn State.
Hey, that was a tough situation, Kurt, and the fact that he was able to jump in there and bring some continuity, solidify the majority of the players to keep them there, hold on to some of those recruits, that's just a tough job. And, you know, the thing about coaching and leadership roles in general in any profession, when you come into a difficult situation, a lot of people only see the surface part, what they're hearing, what people are saying, but there's so much going on behind the scenes, so much individual talk. And the other important thing, I think you got to give him credit, but you got to give his staff credit, because if they're not 100% buying into what's going on, what coach is trying to do, and staying with him at every turn, because they're hitting brick walls, they're hitting negative comments, they're seeing their team and their institution destroyed in the press over and over. Those, that whole group of coaches and their close people, you got to give them a ton of credit for what they've done at Penn State.
Oh, and I think so, and I think when he got that job, he was very careful when he assembled that staff to say, hey, here's a situation, here's what we're going to be up against, here's how we're going to handle this, are you with me? And I think he's got the right guys or they wouldn't have taken the job to begin with. And as a college coach and even as a high school coach, you've got to be happy and comfortable with the guys you bring in, because sometimes if you don't get the right guy or the right lady is on your staff, it could turn trouble.
Now, Kurt, you know, I don't know if you caught the show early. Just changing subjects here. We talked about, you know, if you get on the internet boards, you read it as painting, you read it as creening. You know, all the college sports are getting a little bit kind of crazy on this. What's your thoughts on all this oversigning? I mean, if as a parent, if my kid burbled to somewhere and all of a sudden they were going over that limit, it sure would make me nervous. And I'm not saying IU and Purdue are the only ones doing it. I think everyone's doing it. And just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Are you talking about oversigning or getting guys to overcommit and give their verbal?
Yeah, the verbal. I mean, yeah, verbal, because you've I used recently, it sounds like the Williams kid's going to verbal to there, which is going to put them two over right now, which, you know, Cody, I guess Cody would be going to the NBA for sure then. But if Oladipo or someone doesn't go pro as well, then your math doesn't work out right.
Well, and it always the coaches will tell you it will work out. I look at it on the flip side. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the coaches in this situation. What happens when a guy that verbals and you think he's going to show up on your campus decide he's going to go somewhere else because somebody else got to him? And then where is the coach?
And that has happened at U of E right now. Duncan had committed, and now he's pulled back to take a look at other schools. So I'm sure that sent Coach Simmons scrambling a little bit. I just wonder, Kurt, you know, does the NCAA at some point look at this a little closer and say, you know, we got too much mixing and matching going on around here, too much behind the scenes happening?
Well, I think especially in football, if you want to go that realm, because guys give their verbal, but then they can't sign until, like, November. And some of the coaches in the Southeastern Conference and any big-time conference say, hey, once a guy verbals, that's when the recruiting really starts, because that's where you know or who you know you're up against in recruiting. So I think if guys could sign right away and they're put into that class, that would alleviate some of this over-signing or whatnot. And I think these coaches, Kenny, and you can talk more about this than I can, because you're around more basketball people. I think when they go out and they try to recruit these eighth graders, these freshmen, they're going to offer a bunch of different guys. And in some cases, I think they take the first guys that commit, and then the rest of them kind of know where they stand. I mean, they may offer a kid, say, hey, we're going to offer you, and whoever takes the first two out of the three, we're going to take. I think that helps them cover their backside a little bit. I mean, I would think that's how it goes in some cases if you're offering kids that young.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that this is something that we will continue to discuss on the show and probably get some thoughts of some college coaches and even a chance to talk to maybe a few recruits a little bit about it. You know, switching gears here in our last few minutes, Kurt, we've got the World Series going. The Giants have taken a 2-0 lead on Detroit. Looks like Leyland's behind the eight ball again, Leland. And the Giants have kind of reversed themselves. They started out 0-2 against the Reds, lost the first one, and were down 3-1 against the Cardinals. Now they're up two wins against the Tigers. What are you seeing different? Can this change overnight? How do you look at the series between the Tigers and the Giants quickly?
Well, Coach, I think the Giants are just on a roll. Something happens when your backs are against the wall and you rally as a team. And we talked about it when they played the Reds. They play with great enthusiasm. Sometimes you don't see that in baseball. But those guys are talking, they're communicating, they're getting fired up about playing baseball with each other, and there's something to be said for enthusiasm in athletics and communication in athletics, and they've got it on a roll. And couple that with the fact that the Tigers, if you follow them, don't hit lefties very well, and that's been the case the last two games, or the first two games with Zito and Baumgartner. Now it goes back to Detroit, and they're going to face some harder throwers, some right-handers, and if the Tigers are going to get back in it, they're going to have to do it in the Motor City. But again, I think you'll agree, Kenny, you've got to have enthusiasm to play this game, even at the higher level, because that'll take you a long way a lot of times.
Okay, guys, before we close out this edition of the Coach K and Joe Show, do some predictions real fast. The first game.
Oh, do I have to?
Yes, first game is 3-4 Purdue versus 4-3 Minnesota.
Kurt? Is Marquise Gray playing for Minnesota?
I don't know. I've tried to ignore Purdue football as much as I can.
Well, they're a different team when he's playing quarterback, the Ben Davis grad. I'm going to go with Minnesota at home. Purdue lost that tough one. I'm going to take the Golden Gophers.
I really liked how Purdue bounced back against Ohio State, but I think on the road it goes to Minnesota.
Okay, next game I've got is a battle of 2-5 teams. We've got IU traveling over to Champaign to take on Illinois.
Oh, that's a hard one. Illinois needs a win. Indiana needs a win. Indiana puts up a lot of points. Illinois does not. I'm going to go with the Hoosiers on the road.
They broke my heart against Navy. I really thought they were going to get that win. But I do think they'll go into Champaign, and I think they'll get the victory because they're going to put up the points.
Okay, and lastly, we've got 7-0 Notre Dame traveling to Oklahoma to take on the 5-1 Sooners.
I've got to go with Oklahoma on the home field. It's a toss-up. I'm going to go with the Sooners.
Kenny?
You know, I hate this. This hurts to say it, but I got to go with the Sooners too because I'm not sure that Notre Dame can muster the offense it's going to need. I hope I'm wrong. I hope people call or text us or email us, Facebook us and say, you were wrong, but I got to go with Oklahoma.
Okay, and guys, thanks for being with us this week, and would like to invite everybody out to the volleyball regional tomorrow at Cabby O'Neill, and also at the Seymour at the Jasper versus Seymour sectional tonight. This is Joe Milligan for Kurt Guxell and Coach K. Ken Schulteis signing off till next week. We'll see you later.